two individuals who are overnight guests who are standing directly behind the back door of a house, as seen on the video, standing on the welcome mat, can lawfully be seized at gunpoint when they're not doing anything, when they're just going along being what normal people would be when they're guests at a house. Now, the findings of the Montanez case rely heavily on what Officer Rabel believed. I believe on page 2 it talks about that Rivera seemed nervous. All we're asking is that let a jury look at the tape to determine if Mr. Rivera seemed nervous. It says that Copeland was huddling over. Nothing on the videotape ever shows Mr. Copeland huddling over but for when he got down on the ground at gunpoint. Even in the appellee's answer brief, Your Honor, all they say is Rabel said this, Rabel said that, Rabel. If we're to the point now where the officer's word is the gospel, then there's no need to even file a 1983 complaint because they're always going to say, you know, well, this is what I believe, this is what I saw. The great thing about a case with a videotape and what this court normally has held is when there are objective facts, this is objective evidence, and two people may differ on what they see, let the jury decide this. Furthermore, they rely heavily on the fact that there was so-called a rash of burglaries. That's what Rabel said. And they submitted as part of his affidavit in support of their motion for summary judgment a Google map. I asked this court, it's attached as Appendix C, but just take a look at it. You'll see the print date of that. You'll see when they went and Googled that. It has a 2016 date. So every little alleged burglary that's on that map, there's no indication as to whether that was in 2011, 10, 9, 12, 13, 14, 15, or 16. Most importantly about this, it doesn't indicate the time of the burglary, and it is, as much as they don't want to agree to it, look at it. It is a map of pretty much the entire city. It goes down to Orange City. You see Deltona in it. You can't just take a map some 5 years later and say, oh, this is a port of a rash of burglaries. They are attempting to put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. Nothing happened on the video that was suspicious whatsoever. They claim that Copeland looked around the corner to when he just went to the mailbox, and you see him picking up some trash. But even if he did, there's an unmarked car that, by their own admission, has gone by this house 2 or 3 times driving very slowly. Well, the average citizen is going to look and say, well, I wonder what's going on with that car. But again, that's not on the tape. When we got that order from the district court, we honestly said, well, they're splitting the baby. They gave us one, and they denied the other. And then on appeal, we end up losing. And I'm not here to argue that. But this was the one that moved us the worst because since when, let's just say Mr. Rivera did not walk straight like they claimed. They said that he walked, you know, out a little bit and came closer to the house and out again. This isn't elementary school, Your Honors. We don't have to walk in a single file line. Since when does not walking in a single file line raise to a level of any type of criminal suspicion? Now, we do believe, as we brief, that the court used the improper mean to determine whether or not the seizure was justified. They applied reasonable suspicion. And as the benefactor of one of your previous cases in Moore versus Peterson, this court has clearly now enunciated that Terry and reasonable suspicion does not apply to the home. And what we have here are two overnight guests, again, in the clear curtilage of the home. The video, and I printed out some of the pictures, they're not only on the concrete slab, there's an overhang. There's 3 walls surrounding them. They're just there smoking a cigarette. And then I started thinking, since when do burglars take a smoke break? If what he saw was so criminal, he never saw these two people trying to hide, never saw them duck cover, but more importantly, at the time he came out with the gun, they were taking a smoke break. In all of my time in criminal law, I've never seen a criminal in the process of a crime take a smoke break. This, we believe, is unreasonable. But what has happened is, and over time, this arguable reasonable suspicion and arguable probable cause has become extremely arguable. You have people that have graduated from major universities today that will argue with you and I that the world is still flat. or that there's no global warming, even though they see that the polar bears are dying or floating. No, the empirical evidence is there. Or they'll say, vaccines cause autism. No, vaccines keep children from getting infectious diseases. Similarly, that is what they are arguing. They're trying to come up with possible conclusions that this innocent behavior could have led to. But the 500-pound gorilla that wasn't addressed in Montanez and hasn't been addressed here is, why would you dismantle cameras? What does dismantling of cameras have to do with you believing a burglary is in progress? Not only the outside cameras, and I actually put the time down, but if you just looked at the video, you'll see them getting on the ladder and twisting off cameras. Also, the inside cameras. But again, you claim, arguably, that these two individuals that you saw were engaged in a burglary. Much of their argument in their answer brief deals with facts that were only known after the seizure. And I'm asking this court not even to consider them. That the fact that he had two sandwich knives in his pocket, unless Officer Rabel has x-ray vision, he didn't see those. The pry marks that they said they saw in the back door, again, he didn't see those. The fact that their address didn't match, even though they were overnight guests, and information was provided for that, they didn't even have the IDs at the time of the initial seizure. So even if probable cause was not the standard, even if this court were to say that the gunpoint was not a de facto arrest, even though I briefed that issue, and which was unresponded to by the appellees, notwithstanding that, the reasonable suspicion was not met. So on two fronts, first, we believe the district court applied the wrong standard. But even if they did apply reasonable suspicion, and I would argue that Clark, a unreported opinion, is the only case that they've ever cited to suggest that you could apply reasonable suspicion to the home. And I would distinguish Clark because Clark dealt with an area of a bunch of vacant homes. Vacant. Yes, sir.
I'm enjoying your argument so much, I really hate to interrupt you, but I did have a question. I understand that you take the position the facts are in dispute, but when we evaluate this case, don't we evaluate it through the eyes of a reasonable police officer?
Reasonableness is the linchpin, but what I implore this court to address again is that standard. Don't just let them argue that the world is flat when all the evidence says it is round. The tape speaks for itself, beginning with the claims that he says that the walking pattern of Mr. Rivera. At the time he said that happened, you see Mr. Rivera standing still. He's standing still on the tape. What this court has said over and over again, when two sides can reasonably differ as to what's seen on the tape, let the jury see the tape. Not just let the officer say, well, this is what I believe. But even in believing that, what's the crime in not walking straight? I mean, I'm asking, what's the crime on talking on a phone? I mean, you believe these people are burglarizing because, and I may go a little bit over, because there's no cars there. But were they going to call Uber and say, hey, come pick me up, I'm about to steal from this house? How are they going to take the things that he's alleging he believed a burglary was in session? I ask just to, again, buttress the dismantling of the tapes. Those two things do not add up. At trial, we would have been able to argue to the jury that that's not reasonable for him to believe there's a burglary and his actions don't support it. I've gone over my time, I see. If there's no further questions right now, I would like to yield the balance of my time.
All right. We'll give you your full time for rebuttal.
May it please the court, good morning. Kevin Bledsoe on behalf of the appellees. In Montanez versus Carvajal, this court, reviewing an identical record, de novo, found that the officers had actual probable cause to suspect that Rivera and Copeland were committing a burglary, and therefore that they had exigent circumstances to go inside the house without a warrant. So the district court,
we're not worried about the search, are we?
No, we're not worried about the search, but in Montanez, the court did decide on probable cause to believe that the individuals are completing a burglary.
And of course, Montanez was decided last year, well after this incident that you all lived.
Correct, but I think the court is bound by the prior precedent of Montanez when the Montanez opinion is actually reviewing the identical set of facts.
Well, precedent's the right broad term to use. Are you saying we're bound by the facts as recited by the panel in Montanez?
I believe that you're bound by the conclusion of law, which involves applying the law to the facts. And what the Montanez opinion decided is that the decision about whether the search was lawful turns on whether or not the officers had probable cause to believe that this was a burglary.
That's right, but the decision about the search involved the consideration of additional evidence there that we will not be considering. For example, the finding of the knives, the pry marks, all those things occurred, didn't they, after the critical event in this case?
Well, it depends on what you call the critical event. It occurred within seconds, maybe a minute. Certainly there was the initial stop, and the initial stop, the facts were analyzed by the Montanez court and by the district court as well. It involved, the undisputed facts that there was a rash of daytime burglaries, undisputed facts that Mr. Rivera was pacing on the streets anxious, that there were no cars at the house, that he was on a cell phone, that he was taking a kind of an unusual route on the perimeter of the home, and that the other suspect looked like he was in a position of a lookout. Now, these aren't disputed facts. These are facts that, in fact, the appellants agreed to. So there's nothing about the video that is going to contradict what both Officer Rabel and Rivera agree occurred before the video starts, meaning we don't have video of his demeanor and his actions out on the corner, but Rivera himself acknowledges, yes, I was scared, I was shaky. These are his words. He says, my anxiety was going crazy.
Can I ask you, by the way, I was thinking we were talking about another case. I understand Montanez was the co-defendant. This
correct.
Case. I'm sorry. I was
correct.
Thinking about another case. And I do think the facts are different. That the court relied on that case than the facts that we can rely on in this case. I don't think we're bound by that. But can I just add? I mean, weren't Rivera and Copeland on the curtilage? I mean, by anybody's definition of the residence.
I think they were, in the doorway outside of the residence. So I think it would be the curtilage. But it's of course. The curtilage that somebody could walk up to if they go into the house. I think what's important in this case is that obviously the officers had exigent circumstances to believe that they were burglarizing the place and, did not believe that they were the lawful residents in there. I don't think it's clearly established at all that, the Peyton versus New York idea that you need to have a warrant to enter into the home applies to the curtilage. And it certainly wasn't clearly established in March of 2011. I think the case that my colleague refers to, the Moore versus Peterson case, was a 2015 case. This is March of 2011. So there's no clearly established law that says that, that the standard of stopping somebody outside the physical threshold of the home requires both probable cause and a warrant. And I think that, as the Montanez case said, it would be make no sense to compel an officer who's confronting a suspected burglary to quit the scene and get a warrant before stopping the culprits or the suspected culprits.
So what is the explanation for the manipulation of the cameras?
That happened hours after the initial stop. And that was because the officers are at that point are going to be conducting a pursuant to a warrant, a search, and the concern was that they didn't want that to be something that somebody could remotely see how they were conducting the search of the home with the warrant. But that didn't affect in any way, and even Montanez in the deposition in the record, that didn't affect his ability to have the recording. He says that he just, if you take his light most favorable to him, he says, I just chose not to record the earlier parts because I thought the most important part for my purposes was, the actual stop. And so that's why we don't have what happened, 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes before the actual stop, the things that caused Rabel to be concerned that there was a burglary, the things that caused Rabel to call in the Signal 21, to call his fellow officer, and to meet with the fellow officer, you know, at the gas station beforehand. All those things that aren't disputed, because Rabel himself says, yes, you know, scared, yes, shaky, anxious, I was all those things. Now, he says that was because I got a phone call and I was going to go to New Jersey, but I really was, you know, actually nervous and pacing. You know, were you out kind of on the perimeter of the house, not, you know, going from the front to the back without actually going on, you know, the property? He says, yes. Now, the reason that I was doing that was because I don't like to get my shoes dirty. But, you know, from my officer's perspective, it looks like this is an individual who's, you know, has anxiety, he's nervous, he seems to be trying to avoid being seen on the property. And it's the totality of the circumstances, the rash of daytime burglaries, the anxious pacing on the street, the fact that there's no cars in the home, the time that it was occurred in, that unusual route, all those things, and the other suspect looking like a lookout that both the district court and the 11th Circuit determined was, you know, reasonably suspicious. And in fact, the 11th Circuit said probable cause. Now, they do the initial stop, and they are in the process of, you know, one, securing the suspects, checking their IDs, and to find out that it's not, they don't match the residence. They, at that point, see the knives, see the pry mark, so that increases the concern. And all this is happening in a very short period of time. And then within 10 minutes, they have other grounds, obviously, to arrest the suspects, meaning the warrant for the arrest, as well as the possession of the suspended driver's license. So you have to consider the totality of the circumstances.
Do you agree that we evaluate them through the eyes of the police officer?
Yes, I think that's absolutely true, who are making decisions at, you know, tense, you know, and uncertain circumstances. So, and again, I think that's why both the district court and the 11th Circuit in the earlier case determined that there was, you know, reasonable grounds to be concerned. And during that period of time, when they've secured the suspect, they are actively investigating and making sure that they want to go inside to make sure there are not additional perpetrators or suspects inside the home, and obviously running their IDs, which lead to their arrest. I want to emphasize the fact that, you know, these officers are entitled, and certainly Officer Rabel is entitled to qualified immunity, which means that, you know, there needs to be clearly established law to show that under these set of circumstances that the officer did not have grounds to stop this individual or these individuals. And in this circuit, that means, generally speaking, binding precedent from the United States Supreme Court, the 11th Circuit, or the Florida Supreme Court, so that they would have notice that when you see these set of circumstances, this would not give you grounds to stop. My colleague hasn't cited any case to show that. Now, he does say that the Clark case, which I cited, which seems to be very much on point, is an unpublished opinion, but he hasn't cited any case to show that these set of circumstances do not establish either arguable reasonable suspicion, actual probable cause, or arguable probable cause, either one. Now, obviously, we have a case now, and you know, it's the Montanez case that is analyzing this very set of facts, and I do believe that that case does indicate that the officers had probable cause for the initial stop, which only increased when they find shortly after stopping them, that one of them has knives. There are scratch marks on the door consistent with those knives, and the IDs don't match the residence. So, it's unfortunate that we don't have the video showing what exactly, you know, Rivera was doing that Officer Rabel found suspicious. But we do have, you know, Rivera's own testimony. So these facts, again, aren't just undisputed. They are, in fact, confirmed by the appellants. Now, he again has, you know, says I wasn't burglarizing the place, and I think in the light most favorable to him, you should accept that. But you also have to acknowledge that he was acting suspiciously. He was acting anxious, nervous, pacing, taking an unusual route around an area that has a rash of daytime burglaries. With regard to the map in Rabel's affidavit, Rabel submitted an affidavit saying that there was a rash of daytime burglaries in March of 2011 that happened primarily in the daytime, and that this map reflects the March 2011 burglaries in that area. Now, again, you have to kind of look at his deposition and realize where Route 44 is and where 15A is, but there's no counter. He hasn't submitted any affidavit or deposition testimony to counter what both what Rabel says, and he certainly hasn't submitted anything to counter what both Rabel and his own client says about his own client's behavior. So unless the court has any questions, I think that the appropriate thing to do is to affirm the district court's decision, and I think that certainly the Martinez case, I think it's controlling, but I think it certainly should be persuasive for all the reasons.
Do you have any authority that is controlling?
Well, just the fact that there is a prior precedent rule, which I think would be, the United States Art versus Archer case.
Is your theory that there's some kind of privity or something of that nature between co-defendants?
I think it's the fact that, what's unusual about this is that the Martinez case is so on point. I mean, normally it's just that, there's a decision by a prior, panel that is factually similar. Here, it's actually factually identical. And I think when you look at the Martinez case, what the Martinez case is saying is that, here I'm reading on page 211, whether the first two entries into Martinez residence were constitutionally permissible turns on whether the officers had probable cause to suspect a burglary. If they did, then they could enter, and it seems clear to us that they did. So it's identifying the issue, whether the officers had probable cause, and it says its decision turns on the resolution of that issue. It reaches a conclusion. It seems clear to us that they did. And of course, it analyzes the facts in great detail, both in the beginning of the opinion and in the end. And it's talking about both the initial stop and the reasons for the initial stop, and the fact that after obviously finding the knives and seeing the scratch marks, which occurred shortly thereafter, that suspicion even increased. So again, we feel that the facts are pretty strong, and that this decision of the district court should be affirmed.
Mr. Haynes, I have a question I want to ask you, but I'll wait. If there's some points you want to make,
I'll take the question.
Okay, here's my question. I'm curious as to what your theory of your case is. Is it that these officers legitimately thought this was a burglary in progress, but they're wrong? Or did they have some ulterior motive? It wasn't really an honest evaluation of the facts to lead them to believe it was a burglary, or is it something else? I don't understand
your
theory of the case.
Trial-wise, if we would have gotten to trial, Mr. Martinez would have testified as to what he was informed the reason for the search was, which had to do with drugs. That question leads into...
It's a pretext. Your position is it's a pretext for a drug search.
Yes. And we were precluded from doing that because of the summary judgment based upon reasonable suspicion. You all asked the question, if you look on camera one at 12:01:27, which is about maybe 40 minutes after this incident, not hours, you see an officer meddling with the camera. So again, the whole meddling with the camera shows the unreasonableness of the position that we did this seizure based upon a belief that there was a burglary. The one thing they keep pointing about this rash of burglaries, and they still didn't address it, he attached a 2016 map. Nothing on that map establishes the dates of which these burglaries occurred. They cannot rely upon that now. Whether or not you're bound by the facts of the previous case first, I argue that you don't, but it's only up to a certain point. He keeps saying there's probable cause because it's been previously found in the Montanez decision. But if you strip away those facts that were found after the gunpoint seizure on the curtilage of the home, they don't have it. If there's a page on there that said the walking in the, either the district court's order or the appellate order, that the unusual walking that's not on tape, that the hunching over, which this is on tape, but it's not on tape, if that arose a probable cause, I would eat that page or two with some mustard. It's not on there. It's not on there because that's not how the court addressed it, because it came to the court in Montanez on whether or not it was probable cause plus exigent circumstances. He keeps calling this a stop. There are no stops in the home. As I did argue in Peterson, that's been clearly established by the Fourth Amendment itself. Sometimes the law is so clear that you don't have to have a ruling to say that, well, you know, this, you should know this. You should know this, that you do not have Terry stops at the home. And that is what apparently occurred, but for the gun. The gun takes Terry right out of it. The gun now makes it probable cause. And there's never been an analysis as to whether or not at that point. But I'll ask the court to consider this. This was.
Are you saying that once the gun came out, it was an arrest?
It was a de facto arrest. All of the qualifications were there and was not addressed by the district court. That they were ordered down, they were not free to leave, and they were then cuffed. All of this happened before finding of the knives.
I have to say, if somebody was pointing a gun at me, I would think I was under arrest. But I'm not sure that that's consistent with 11th Circuit precedent.
But it's not per se, but there's an inquiry that has to transpire that wasn't transpired because the court just said, oh, we're going to go reasonable suspicion. We're going to call this a stop. The court never addressed the curtilage that we see this occurred on. Again, that takes it in to probable cause. The one thing I would ask the court to consider, though, if this is such a burglary and you think something is happening, didn't he go and meet up with another officer? If time is of the essence and something dangerous is happening, the same way you came out by yourself with this gun the second time around, you would have done it the first time around. These are the facts that are disputed. I understand that we have to look at a reasonable officer, but we also have to look at the reasonable officer in light of the objective facts. We cannot let them put the lipstick all over this pig and say, let's kiss it. What we have to do is say, well, is it reasonable for him to make this argument that what he saw was probable cause of a burglary? And I would submit that, again, where are they going to take the loot? They got to call Uber or something because there's no car. So if you objectively and reasonably look at these facts, all we were asking for is, can a jury of our client's peers say whether or not what this officer did was reasonable? I mean, we're not getting into it's cited in his depo that, you know, he's done this before. He's caused injury to people because he has violated the home with his gun and shot people.
I hate to interrupt you too, but I want to be sure I leave you your minute for your closing.
I'm sorry.
I agree. I mean, that's got to be curtilage. I mean, but the curtilage cases from the Supreme Court came out after, and our court really came out after this incident. Is that a problem for you?
Your Honor, I don't believe it's a problem because when you read those opinions, they cite older cases. And what we're dealing with here again is right outside. I mean, he's on the welcome mat. I mean, they're right there. But even if it's not, then let's address it from reasonable suspicion. What burglar sits there and smokes a cigarette? Your Honor, I'm at my minute, but you all can feel free to interrupt me.
We want to hear.
Okay. The 14th Amendment is not arguable. It's a truism. It's immutable. Its roots go back to our Declaration of Independence. And today of all days, this is normally a holiday. I normally don't work on this day. This is the 65th anniversary of Brown versus the Board of Education, where a court that had at least three members from the Deep South decided unanimously to give the 14th Amendment some teeth. Over the years, it's had gum disease when it comes to 42 USC 1983, which was promulgated to enforce the 14th Amendment because of this arguable standard. I'm asking right now that you all give this 14th Amendment some dentures on this day.
All right.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
You're about to run out of time.
That's right.
If I'm a police officer and I have probable cause that a burglary is in progress, what relevance does whether or not the suspect is in the curtilage or outside the curtilage have to do with anything?
That's a good question, Your Honor. And that's why we're here. Probable cause was never established that at the time of the gunpoint, at the time of that seizure, that probable cause existed.
So that's the question. It's really not whether or not they're inside the curtilage or outside the curtilage. It's whether or not there's probable cause or reasonable belief
right.
that they're committing a burglary.
And but it has to be probable cause and not reasonable suspicion. That is the issue. And when you look at Montanez, the probable cause came after the seizure. All of those points that cited, oh, I'm over my time, in Montanez were things that were found after the seizure. We ask that this court reverse and send back to the district court, reversing the granting of the summary judgment and allow the jury of the peers to decide this matter. Thank you.
Thank you.